Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. In a time when the world grapples with the tiny details and sweeping questions about illness and wellness, healthcare and humanity, Augustana University announces a new Medical Humanities and Society minor. Joining us in the Kirby Family Studio, we have Augustana professors Ann Peterson and Peg Preston. Also with us is Madigan Moore. She's a senior pre-med student at Augustana University. Welcome. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
All right, I want to start with you, Anne, and let's go back before we go forward, because how long have you been sort of talking? You're a professor of religion in the religion department. What business have you to talk about healthcare and medicine? How did some of this collaborative work begin?
Some of the collaboration began before I even started at Augustana. So
really?
Art Olson and some folks in nursing taught a capstone course, senior integrated course on healthcare and ethics back in the 80s. And then Augie had a master's program for a while in bioethics. And because my field was religion and science, they started pushing me toward medical science and humanities. And we had a number of capstones that we taught. And then there's now a joint appointments between South Dakota School of Medicine and Augustana's religion department. And so we've been collaborating on these ideas for a long time. And most recently, this idea probably came up in the last 4 or 5 years.
At least. Yeah.
Maybe 10.
Because Anne and I, if we go back, we did a capstone with two biologists. So we had two classes that would come together with four professors. And we looked at all aspects of kind of humanities and healthcare. And so it was
So I get excited. I mean, I'm an Augustana graduate. I think people know that. Full disclosure, I get a little excited when I think about Augustana capstones because in my personal life, I had Kate Arneson or Kate Will and Murray Haar for my capstone experience. And that was a long time ago. And I still remember the books we read. I still remember the films we watched. I still remember the discussions we have because it was such a great opportunity to really integrate in a thoughtful, interdisciplinary way. So you remember that experience as a student for a long time to come. You find that with your students that they'll, when you see them years down the road, those experiences make a difference.
Those collaborative courses, and Madigan can speak to it as a student, but those collaborative courses where you're standing with a fellow faculty member are just so, they're enhancing. They're exciting in the sense that you're getting these two, you know, kind of ideas that are sometimes working together well, sometimes clashing. So I don't know if Madigan can speak to.
Yeah, I've had multiple courses at Augustana actually where they're not capstone anymore, but they really do integrate those two different sides of a story. And I think that's really important in any profession you're going into, is you're going to be working with people, and people aren't one-sided, they're dimensional. And so one of the classes I took my freshman year was the history of infectious disease. I don't know if that was the name of it, but it was taught by a biology professor, but we looked at the history of epidemics and also the biology of it. And then Dr. Preston taught a course with an English professor, Dr. Hicks, on the troubles in Ireland. And so we looked at the history of it and then the literature to go along with it. And that was really enhancing as well.
So as a pre-med student, when you're thinking about a future in medicine, at what point did you start realizing, because you apply for Augie when you're, you know, maybe 17, 18 years old, you're, you know, getting out of high school, you have this pathway that you think makes sense. And then at some point you realize that this world that you want to be in is really about human suffering and in human healing, and you have these bigger ideas other than just how does the system work. Or did that happen for you when you were a freshman? Did you know that coming in? Were you prepared for that?
You know, I don't think anyone can be completely prepared for the amount of ethics that you're going to encounter in medicine, because the higher you go, the more there is. And I think as you get more and more into the humanities, like with Anne's class, medicine, ethics, and theology that I took this last fall, you realize just how much you don't know. The reason I want to go into medicine is I had a personal experience at a young age where I was a patient and I had a physician help me through a vulnerable time. Mm-hmm. So I think that he treated me as just a whole person, and he treated my humanity, not just my symptoms, really was a push for me to go into medicine. So I think that has been an interest of mine all along and why I see this minor as so valuable. But I think the more you get into the literature and you learn about different sides and you read people's experiences, and you really just get a sense of how important it is that the ultimate goal of medicine is you are not serving, like, you're not treating symptoms, you're treating a person. You're serving a patient. And I think that's why this minor is so important, because we already have this excellent science curriculum and psychology and sociology, and we get those pre-med kids ready to go, critical thinking skills, you're ready. But this will further enhance them to treat the person that's going to be in their office someday.
I want to talk a little bit with you, Peg and Ann, about workforce development and this idea of higher education in South Dakota meeting a need that we're seeing in the workforce right now. Do you see a connection between what, you know, healthcare facilities in the city of Sioux Falls, in the state of South Dakota, in the region, want students like Madigan to learn before they apply to med school?
Our hope is that this minor will help students from a variety of vocational interests. So anybody who's interested in occupational therapy, nursing, chaplaincy,
journalism. I said before that, it's healthcare journalism. I would have taken this as a minor, as a really insightful way to be a better journalist.
Right.
You get the science aspect of it, the ethics aspect, deeper questions.
And the healthcare administration. I mean, there's so much business that's embedded in this. So I think our hope is that it reaches across a spectrum of situations where this minor will enhance the student's background so that when they apply, they have more than just a major sitting with them, but they'll have this other piece of them that I think in some way sets them apart.
Yeah. I think there's some surprises in the sense that, for example, in the course that I teach with a biologist, we actually bring in both a palliative care doctor and a grief counselor. And at the end of the course, the students go through a grief counseling session. But I would say even teachers need to understand what the grief kind of path is, that if you have a child in your classroom who's maybe parent or a sibling has died, you have to gain a greater understanding that child's recovery is not, a couple of weeks, that the understanding of how that and what that child needs. Mm. In professions, you need to have the sympathy. I think Madigan spoke of it well. You need to have the well-roundedness of understanding that the personal life also affects the kind of...
That's huge. Mm-hmm. And what you could bring into the workforce just with that alone. Just so you've thought that... And this is, tell me a little bit about how the minor will break down, and then we'll get into maybe some of those big questions in the courses that you've already taught. How do you look at some of these things? So first, how does the minor...
The minor starts with an introductory course in medical humanities, which is really now its own discipline. And that will be taught on a regular basis, and it really uses narrative stories to access questions about ethics. And then we have our three divisions, natural science, social science, and humanities, under which a number of courses are offered, and the students can pick one from each of those. And then the final course is a new one we're trying. It's an interdisciplinary course that will basically be called Designing Your Life. It's a vocation course based on a course that's already offered at Stanford University. I believe we learned it's the most popular course at Stanford. And so the students will actually be doing some kind of be in a setting for an internship or doing research. And then they will come together and as a cohort and meet for their senior experience with us.
Yeah. So similar to the honors program, the Civitas
program. It is very similar.
Where you have that cohort and those people. So the Designing Your Life authors, the Sanford professor joined us here on the show when that book first came out.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we interviewed them and kind of built a program on what that looks like in higher education. At the time, nobody here in South Dakota was really digging into that work, which is really well-resourced and researched and pretty fascinating.
I think the hope is that, Augie, that it will work for all our interdisciplinary programs, that that course will be a capstone so that there's some kind of integration at the end.
Right. Talk a little bit about how the collaboration works between professors at Augustana. You know, it's a smaller university. You see each other a lot. Tell me a little bit about what that synergy is like.
As an example, a number of years ago, senior biology faculty member Maureen Diggins and I had mutual interests in beginnings of life and reproductive issues. So we decided to teach, actually at that point it was a Civitas or honors course, and we were also talking to Peg and to Jennifer Goebbels, and they were teaching more of a history or a broader scope of the history of medicine, and we decided it would be fun to integrate the students and the speakers and classes into a January session. And so the college provides opportunities for linking those kinds of collaborations together. I've taught for a number of years. We had Sanford faculty teaching with us. Mary Helen Harris, an ER doc, taught with me. Luann Eidsness has been part of our collaboration. Jerry Freeman, the med school. So the Sanford School of Medicine has been a big part of what we do. Ellie Schellinger and Gretchen Spars over at the DeGroote Center. So we have this kind of network of people that connect.
It's a powerhouse of thinkers
right there.
Yeah. And one really good knitter, at least.
Right.
Mary Helen Harris. Dr. Mary Helen Harris was also on the side, a pretty excellent knitter.
She was.
And you mentioned Jerome Freeman, and we just talked recently on this program about the kindness curriculum at the University of South Dakota, which is where a student like Madigan could end up going from a Sioux Falls College to a Sioux Falls University to a the University of South Dakota, and then working right here at home. We're hoping to keep you here in South Dakota.
I would love to serve South Dakota.
We're going to talk more about this with our Augustana professors and students. We need to take a quick break. You are on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking today with some Augustana University folks about a new medical humanities and society minor. We have a senior student, Madigan Moore, with us here in the studio. Also, Professor Ann Peterson and Professor Peg Preston, Dr. Peterson and Dr. Preston. And thank you so much for being here with us. And let's keep this conversation going. I want to go back, Ann, to something you said earlier about the medical humanities course having a narrative structure and talking about stories. Can you tell us more about what you mean by that?
Sure. So I think for a lot of time in medical education, the tendency with the medical model was to focus more on what I would consider the mechanics or the science of things without considering what the person's story that they bring to the physician is. And that's just part of it. Narrative medicine is now really a discipline in and of itself in medical schools. And what you try to do is to understand the contextual situation for how people make ethical decisions, what beliefs they have, and how you treat people, how you make legislative decisions. Something as simple as geography. South Dakota has unique problems and possibilities because of our geographical situation of distance that can complicate people's stories about access to healthcare.
And if listeners are having a hard time putting into like how does this work or what would it apply to, I would just point to mental health legislation going through the legislative session right now. This legislative session, we talked about transgender healthcare and who's involved with that and who has what to say about it. The coronavirus, as we talk about, when do you socially isolate? Who gets a vaccine? Who gets it when? And, the Democrats, of course, are in their primaries and their debates talking about whether healthcare is a universal right. There's no yes, no, this or that question that I have for you, but these are the kinds of, do I understand this correctly? These are the kinds of big topics that you would sit in a classroom and say, how do we approach that?
And we bring in my course, for as a small example, we and in Anne's, we bring in healthcare professionals. So we bring in, for example, we the course is life, death, and the history of medicine. So we bring in an OB and we bring in a midwife, and then we bring in a kind of internist, and we also bring in a cancer survivor, and we bring in then a palliative care doc and a doctor who helps with grief counseling. And we start them off by having them tell their stories. So when we talk mm-hmm. about this narrative, we want the students to understand, you know, these people had lives and, you know, what they went through or what, you know, they considered before they chose medicine. You know, we have one doctor who finished her degree as a nurse and then went on to medical school. And we had another doctor who wasn't, it wasn't until he was over 30 and had 3 children that he went to medical school. Mm. So it allows them to see the paths that they can follow and the opportunities they might pursue, and that medical school doesn't have to be done immediately after graduation.
Right, yeah. There are paths. Mm-hmm. There are paths forward. And Madigan, you mentioned having, you know, your own personal story. Knowing that that story has an impact on your life is going to change not only the field that you want to go into, but how you go into it as well. Story is important to you, too.
I think it's very important. And I think part of what this minor will teach people is, you know, perfect empathy is impossible. You can never completely put yourself into somebody else's shoes. But the more you expose yourself to someone else's viewpoint or their story, the more you can understand what they're going through. And I think as a physician or a healthcare professional, if you're sitting in that office and you can better understand mentally, physically, and emotionally what that person in front of you is going through, you're going to be able to treat them better and more fully.
And it occurs to me that you will remember that you're a human being too.
Right.
Right. You know, because what we put our med students through is sort of notoriously rigorous and sometimes inhumane in some cases. I believe there's efforts to right. being made to make that, you know, a little more gentle, but still it's a rough go of it that you'll be facing when you get to medical school, and you have a human body too, and you have a story, and you grieve for patients and for, you know, you have a life.
It is. It is. And, you know, as you move forward, when you go through something as rigorous as a pre-med curriculum or into medical school, you realize you are human and you're going to fail. Mm. But then, again, I think it's always what you learn from your failures moving forward. And I think humbling experiences can allow you to connect with people as well if you're willing to learn from them.
One of the people that, and some of the professions you may not think of right away in healthcare, a good friend of both Peg's and mine is Dr. Gail Reardon. She's a dentist in town, mm-hmm. and she's going to be on our advisory board, I believe, and is so excited about this program, has advanced degrees beyond her dental degree, and really works at this sort of integrative practice so that you don't just come in and get your teeth cleaned, right? She looks at you as the whole person and your health. And so there are professions, too, that will be really important for students who may not have originally thought about this that can use this minor. Right.
The history of medicine, Dr. Preston, it seems from those of us not in the medical field, not in history professions, that it's moving faster than ever with advances and changes and ethical questions and technology and machine learning and artificial intelligence. Is that true? Are we moving faster than ever? Or when you look back at other times in history, you can say, wow, things were moving awfully fast in the 1900s or the 1800s too?
Yeah, I think it does feel like we're moving at light speed, and certainly the issues with CRISPR, daily we hear some new advancement with CRISPR, but I think we do have to put ourselves probably in the latter half of the 19th century to see something similar, where you know, the manufacture of pharmaceuticals and chemicals all of which will play a huge role both at the turn of the century and into the 20th century, we can also point to as a time of just a tremendous change. And so, and that is something we point to, you know, we tell our students to be aware of, is that, you know, it feels like this is all moving very fast. But there is, you know, times in history where we can see the same kind of evidence. And just, I mean, even dealing with this coronavirus right now, I mean, we just taught our students about the 1918-1919 flu pandemic. Mm. And so I know those students are watching this because they learned a lot about, you know, how the world dealt with that at the end of the World War.
Tell us some of the parallels that you see.
Well, certainly the fact that we can see it circumnavigate the globe, mm-hmm. right? If it feels less scary, or you should, you know, we had a massive war going on at the time, and certainly mm-hmm. that contributed right. Very much to the spread. So it helps that we don't have this kind of worldwide conflict happening at this point, but we certainly see how travel makes the
right.
the spread just
faster,
so easy,
yeah.
whether on water or in air, we can see how this can move around.
And we
the world.
Had all those soldiers in trenches, mm-hmm. in close quarters, and I have to make the parallel to Syrian refugee camps.
Right.
And just
that is
if
right.
the coronavirus came to a place like that,
yeah.
the massive humanitarian crisis.
Sanitary conditions
that already
which
exists,
facilitate.
What could happen next is right. astonishing to even contemplate. And religion and science, religion and medicine.
So
what's up with that?
So just to give you an example of how we might approach that, I use a book by a Duke Divinity School professor. Her name is Kate Bowler, and it's Everything Happens for a Reason and All the Other Lies I've Been Told. Yeah. She was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And we look at the various ways that people respond religiously to different questions. What is God's will? Why did this happen to me? What's my future? What is even defining things like what is the beginning of life? What does it mean to be a human person? Those aren't necessarily the same questions. And I think with Augustana's commitment as a college, as the ELCA, we try to be open to and explore these questions from multiple dimensions so that when students have these things happen in their own life or face them in a practice, they're able to understand the importance of those issues in people's lives and not push them aside, mm-hmm. as well as understanding their own religious commitments. So part of what we try to do, I think, is to provide different kinds of opportunities to look at multiple perspectives. Our culture tends to do things in either or. It's either this or this. And I think one thing I try to do desperately is to say, well, maybe there's 3 or 4 or 5 ways to talk about this from a religious or theological yeah. viewpoint.
Peg, Bernie Sanders, a candidate for president or for the Democratic nomination for president, was on the television the other day and saying, you know, healthcare is a human right, and people were cheering, his supporters were cheering. And I'm not asking you to be political and weigh in on an election, but I am asking you, how long have we been asking the question about who deserves what healthcare when it comes? I mean, that has to be something in history that you've seen as well, that people have wondered about for a long time. Who deserves what? Who can pay for what? What's the role of money? What's the role of government? Do you see that in different historical moments?
Certainly. And I think if we just look back, even as, you know, in the last century, in the post-World War II era, and it began in post-World War I, if we look at Europe as our example, you begin to see those nations, you know, try to approach that question and provide their citizens with almost a cradle to grave opportunities and that they can pursue. So that, you know, and again, Mr. Sanders, right, is a democratic socialist. And if we look over at Europe, we see socialized medicine. And this is something we certainly have talked about in our course. It just to say, if our healthcare system isn't perfect, are there other examples of healthcare systems that we might choose to learn from? And what we might, you know, do to make ours more accessible to all citizens, not just those who can afford to pay for healthcare.
In our remaining a minute that we have left, as we're talking about this medical humanities and society minor, can you think of a question? I want to put you on the spot, but is there a question that you've heard in class that you think is really useful going forward? Or is there a question that you always consider, like, you know, when you hear something on the news, ask yourself this. Are there some foundational questions that you return to again and again as professors or as a student?
What I'm hearing real quickly is how climate change and climate science is affecting healthcare. Mm. And students, more so now than ever, are scared. So that's something I think I'm very aware of, is how the future plays a role in their livelihood.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Anyone else in the last 20 seconds?
You know, when we're dealing with students from multiple disciplines, and we say to them, how do you see this playing out in your discipline? As a teacher, how are you going to take a better understanding of medicine into the classroom, whether you teach on it or just at least it helps you with relationships with your students, to be a better person in the vocation of teaching?
I think one of the biggest things, like when you're dealing with ethics and medicine, is why does someone feel the way that they do? And why is it an issue? And why is this a problem? And why are there opposing sides? Or not just opposing sides, but multiple dimensions to this issue. So why does someone think the way they do?